Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everybody, my name is Neil White, I'm from Backpage. You're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. This is part two of our Q&A, previewing the new season in Spain. If it's Leo Messi content that you seek, may I suggest you try part one, which is right below this episode on our feed. Right here, we will be looking beyond Barcelona and yes, even Real Madrid to the other contenders for the honours in Spain this season. Let's hand it over to our socios at patreon.com/Graham Hunter, the guys that support the show and get to ask Pete Jensen and Graham Hunter the questions for these Q&A episodes. Kyle Maguire, hello and thank you for getting involved. Kyle asks, is Atleti going to win it again? Or will someone outside the big three break through? Gentlemen, we are going to sequentially get through the main runners and riders. So let's focus for Kyle on Atleti. Pete Jensen, where are the reigning champions at right now?
Well, I think the big question is Suarez. I think he was powered last season by all that rage about having been dumped by Barca and treated so badly. It was like rocket fuel for him. Will he have the same motivation? Will he be able to produce the same performances without that motivation of proving everybody wrong? If they got Griezmann, it would have been sensational, I think. And with Saul out, who Diego Simeone only uses to fill the gaps in his team, it would have been good business. It's not going to be Griezmann. It's probably going to be Rafa Mir, or at least as we speak, that looks like the closest. He's a huge talent and will benefit from training alongside Suarez. There's no doubt about that. And at the other end of the pitch is where I have the question, because I thought last season, particularly playing three centre backs, they've got quite a shallow pool of centre backs to play three. And whenever one of Savic, Jimenez and Hermoso was out, they looked like it wasn't as smooth. And as far as I know, and as we stand, they haven't brought in, I think Nguyen's come back from, he was on loan at Granada. So that's another possible problem. But listen, they've got the greatest goalkeeper. They've got the sensational talents of Llorente. De Paul is a fantastic signing. João Felix, they're still shaking him to wake him up. He still doesn't look the player that Atleti fans hoped he would be, but there's plenty of time for him to become that player. Trippier's stayed despite all the talk about United. So they go into the season, as much as Simeone will hate it, as the favourites.
Yeah, Atleti, Neil, it's so odd to look at a champion that hasn't won back-to-back titles for 70-something years. So it's an extraordinary challenge for them to do it. That might be an incentive. But to look at a champion that hasn't renewed very much, even in the context of a market which is quite moribund, and to say right across to, just to echo Pete's point about not just Luis Suarez, but can all of them be as hungry? Are they built of the stuff as a squad that says more? Give us more. We want more. I think the club itself will be desperate that Simeone prioritises getting as far as possible in the Champions League for as much new income as possible. They'll budget for quarterfinals, but if they could go further, that would delight them because of their financial situation. One of the little markers that we need to take, Pete talked about Rodrigo de Paul, and I know he's changed, but at Valencia, when he was a youngster, I looked at him and I saw promise, and I haven't watched enough of him to know now that he's a player that you could, on this podcast, we could say, a vouchsafe that he's going to be a real impetus towards the title. But Cholo Simeone thinks so. I even with his capture of Luis Suarez, I've rarely seen Simeone as, what would you call, animated about a signing. He wanted this guy, he believes he's crucial to them, and therefore you know, I think they're to be taken seriously. They should be top three. The thing not to, to forget, and United tried their socks off on Trippier, and Trippier wanted to come, but Atleti kept asking for, you know, like buyout clause prices, because they did not want, the point I'm making is they did not want to lose him. Simeone was adamant that Trippier was vital. He felt almost as animated about that as he did on capturing, finally capturing Rodrigo de Paul. And that tells you something about how keenly Simeone's looking at where his key strengths are. And the not mid-season, because they were very good in sort of January in the second class. Was it second? No. Sorry, no. The drop in form from Atleti came early spring, let's call it, where they went several games, particularly after losing back-to-back to Levante, where they looked, if not clueless, and certainly rudderless. They looked tired. They didn't look like champions. And they got muscular towards the end and got over the line because of various different things happening. It was a combination of circumstances that made them champion. And I don't think that's going to happen again. So with respect to Kyle and his question about champions, they're in the mix. I think it's a guide that they haven't done it for 70-something years. And having already, in the last episode, tipped Buston out in the title, I'm going to say, close but no cigar, Kyle.
Yes, given that you did tip Barcelona in part one to win the title, I think you're going to be denying several club cigars in the next 25 minutes or so. Let's move on. Here's an audio question from Socio Tom Lee.
Hi, Graham. Hi, Pete. Tom Lee here with one on the back of the Socio fag packet. Sevilla, seemingly hell-bent on signing half of the Argentine national team and integrating them, that same Argentine national team that have just won major honours. Lopetegui stays, could have gone to London, maybe. That was a bit of a rumour, was it not? So that's great. Already, that wonderful stadium, brilliant, lovely, fantastic, atmospheric Sanchez-Pizjuan, especially with the kind of, I guess, the doubts and the question marks about the big three, if you like. Could it be, and what I'm really driving at here, could this be that, seriously, honestly, deep down, with integrity, could this be their year? Because not just a sort of a bit of a flirt with it at Christmas time and sort of loads of possession outside the box, metaphorically. Have they actually got enough oomph and enough under the bonnet now to go on and win this thing? Because I think it'd be a great story, but stories don't necessarily pay the bills. Sevilla, yes, no, maybe, somewhere in between. Gracias, gents. Good to have you back.
And along similar lines, here's Harrison Schuller. Graham, what do you think Sevilla's chances of winning La Liga are, given how weak Barcelona and Madrid feel? Could it be Lopetegui and Simeone in a title challenge? So, Graham, Harrison's pointing at you. Why don't you take that one first?
Harrison, Tommy boy, you've got the Mr. Angry in me awoken. This should have been their year for the first time since the Second World War ended. Yes, towards the end of last season and during the summer, I was talking about Sevilla as dark horses. And there's a universe of time left in the transfer market if you're Monchi. But what's been going on? It's patently clear where they need reinforcements. Enesiri is not enough of a goal threat on his own. It was absolutely imperative last season, when they could have won the title and will be this season, that they have somebody upon whom you can fundamentally count, not just to score 15-16 goals, but to score the crucial goals, the Wissam-Ben-Yedder goals, if you think about his performance against Manchester United away, where they turn a good performance into a victory, where they sneak with a point instead of a defeat, somebody who can take a different form of goal scoring, which is probably, I mean by that, somebody who's a goal poacher when they're high up the pitch, rather than their prominent ability to score from shooting from distance, from counter-attacks, from crosses into the box. When Sevilla have a team on the ropes, I want them to be signing somebody who can just unlock things. Now, that comes at a premium, but Monchi is the best in the business. And I genuinely thought that Koundé leaving or not, and generation of cash or not, I genuinely believe that by now Monchi would have shown us, here's the goal scorer that I know we need, and that he'd be in, embedded, that he'd have played some pre-season football. The other disappointing thing for me, even though they've got Lamela as part of the deal and cash, and that clearly Sevilla are feeling like the cats have got the cream with that deal, the loss of Brian Hill from La Liga, even though he was still, you know, an apprentice footballer, you know, that pisses me off because he's a joy to watch. Good luck, Spurs fans. I think it's one of those deals whereby, given the needs that Spurs have got, given Brian Hill's age and size, and if Sevilla banked on getting a great deal, and then in a year's time getting him back again when he hasn't quite got it because Spurs have gone too soon on the... I think it's Paratici, the ex-Juve man, who's the DOF at Spurs now. And he's got a good eye. But Brian Hill will need to be given time and patience, and he'll need to be allowed to flourish and to learn in England, given that he was on that route anyway in Spain, and will need more so in the Premier League. He's a gorgeous talent, and I'm going to miss him a lot. But Monchi, what are you up to, man? Get your finger out. Otherwise, neither Tom nor Harrison and their little delirious rants about Sevilla for the title are going to have any joy.
Yeah, presumably what's holding Monchi up is not knowing whether Chelsea are going to cough up for Koundé, and also not being sure about the CVC money and whether it's coming or not. I mean, I think there are players in the pipeline. They want José Lu as the striker. I don't know if that satisfies Graham's, and he's shaking his head at me now. I'd rather have Ben Yedder back than José Lu. I'll go with you there, Graham. Montiel's going to come in, the River, I think he's left back, isn't he? No, he's right back. Augustinsson from Bremen on the other side, and Thomas Delaney from Dortmund. So they're the four players that it looks like Monchi's going to try and bring in. Be interesting to see what happens with Koundé. They held out last year, didn't they? City wanted him, and Sevilla didn't give in, and they ended up keeping him. Is it going to be the same? If it's the same, has he got the attitude to still have a good season? I think he has. But yeah, like Graham, been a little bit underwhelmed because this is their time, you know. Now is the time to seize the opportunity. And yeah, really disappointed that they let Brian Hill go because he's freshness, he's theirs, although he's not Sevilla born, but they've brought him through, as it were. And people say, well, he wouldn't have played that much, but I think, you know, even as an impact player in big games and getting little runs here and there through the season, he just would have given them something else. So, all to prove after so far underwhelming summer.
Next up is socio Chris Hennigan. Hello, Chris. Chris runs through really the entire list of runners and riders, but he mentions two that we haven't covered elsewhere. So, Chris, if you'll allow me, I'll use your question to point the guys towards Villarreal and Real Betis. So I wonder if in the style of a courtroom drama, we could divvy this up. One of you could take Villarreal, one of you could take Real Betis, allowing the other one a brief rebuttal on either point. So Pete, why don't we start you off with Villarreal?
Yeah, I think Villarreal could finish top four this season. I think I'm excited by the signing of Dia. I thought he looked good the other night. I think he could be a good foil for Gerard Moreno. They've obviously secured Gerard Moreno for the long-term future. Chiquezzi's still to come back and to improve. Iborra will be massive for them this season. They missed him last season. Capui's finally settled in, so they have him as well. They've got Mandy in from Betis, who, by the way, I think are going to struggle. Let's get a better season from Estupiñán because he was disappointing last season. They've got two good goalkeepers, great final goalkeepers anyway. Asenka are brilliant the other night and really lost in the Europa League final. So the squad is there for Emery. He's 1 year into it. They've got that. They've got the tag of never having won anything. They've got rid of that. It's going to be a really big season for them, I think, and Moreno as well, the other Moreno, Alberto Moreno, playing higher up the pitch, which I've always thought, and I know that's the kind of dumb thing to say when there's an attacking fullback who's not great at defending, to say play him higher up the pitch, and 9 times out of 10 it's not the solution, but I've always thought with Moreno it really could be. He can be a liability defensively, and he's great in the final third. And although I know he went back during the game, and Graham was there, and he saw the game in person. I was in and out of it, watching it on the telly, so he maybe has another view. But I thought Moreno higher up the pitch looked superb. So I'm excited by Villarreal this season, and I think they can definitely finish top four.
Graham, you did get a close look at them. during the course of the Super Copa in Belfast. So your thoughts on Villarreal and then moving into Real Betis for Chris.
Yeah, they're really exciting. They have, I think, the right mentality. Twice now in recent months, I've watched two 90-minute training sessions with Emery, and you begin to understand what it is that everybody talks about. I mean, he's interventionist like Benitez and Guardiola, his roaring at the players throughout training in terms of minute details that he wants them to change, the way he injects an urgency and a demand, I think, has permeated throughout the club. It's not just about the first team. Alberto Moreno, for my taste, started his career at Sevilla very much as a wide midfielder winger, and then was converted back. I couldn't agree more with what Pete was saying about him. And also, he's got a combative, urgent, joy about his daily work and training and his football. I think he's an important player. I asked Gerard Moreno about the partnership, and he said, so far so good. Him and Dia don't seem to have had, I think, almost any time before the Super Cup playing with one another, but the particularly the goal and the way that Dia came into the game and is patently still to find full match fitness was really exciting. And it needed to be, because Paco Alcacer was coming back from his third big injury of a year, and the partnership between him and Gerrard should have been great, and it wasn't. It may well be, but Bacca's gone. They now need to give Pau Torres a lot of holidays, so we're going to see a couple of months whereby his importance needs to be grabbed by Mandy. Foyth is the player that Unai Emery just thinks is a god that can walk on water. Unai Emery's obsession with Foyth is, it needs to have the microscope put on it in this podcast over the coming months, because he Foyth looked forceful but flawed when I watched him, and Emery's got better eyes, and he just thinks he can do anything, whether it's playing at right back, centre half, centre midfield, which he came into during. Anyway, the long and short is, I think we'll get entertainment from the Yellow Submarine. Really enjoyed watching him and working with him the other night. Betis, I now want to hear why Pete thinks they could struggle. They've done next to no business, and my take on it is that Guido needs to stay. That's been a real discovery, and he's been coached by Manuel Pellegrini into a far better footballer. I think you look across Betis' squad, and there's almost no player that didn't improve in this season under Pellegrini, where the Chilean got his mojo back. It there was no doubt to my mind that this was a product of his ideas, his coaching. It wasn't a product of necessarily the players waking up and saying, well, I enjoy football again, or the brilliance of the signing policy. He turned them around. They haven't lost Borja, which I think is absolutely fantastic, because as moribund and as joyless as his first set of months were at Betis, for the 5 months after he started scoring again, the way in which he gave the team purpose and focus was great. But they lost 50 goals last season again, in a season whereby they were a point or 2 points off finishing fifth. So the second half of the season was absolutely fantastic. Teams very often, if you don't disrupt them, carry, if they've got powerful end of season form, by which I mean, 3-4 months, they often carry it into the beginning of the season. There's a European campaign. I had my hopes relatively high for them, but they need to, the fact that Mandy's gone and he was by a distance their best defender, the fact that Mark Bartra will be playing more because Mandy is gone, means that teams are going to score against them. And the original question, I think, from Chris was about teams under Barcelona flourishing because Messi, every team that saw Messi not on the team sheet was encouraged. So teams will have a go at Barcelona now more than they ever did before and feel that they can beat them. And if Betis can reproduce anything close to what they did last season and really, in my opinion, finish anywhere in the top eight, then Betis will have been satisfied.
Pete, do you want to come back to that? Because you seem to suggest that you were slightly more pessimistic on Betis.
Yeah, I think they're going to have. I think it's going to be tough. I think Pellegrini did a sensational job last season. He's he's a coach that kind of looks languid and you know, half interested and with one eye on retirement. And, you know, it's a bit hot today, lads. Let's just train for 3/4 an hour instead of the hour we were going to do. But actually, it's nothing of the sort. He works tremendously hard. Graham's already said it. Every single player last season improved under him. He sorted out the defence with very few new resources. But I think that's the key, new resources. And it's not always the answer. You know, you can't always say we haven't signed anyone, so we're going to have a terrible season, particularly when they ended the season as well as they did. But they've got Europa League, and it's a whole new ball game when you're trying to play an extra competition. We saw what it did to Espanyol 2 seasons ago. Now they haven't gutted the squad the way that Espanyol did. But it is extra games. Mandy, as Graham says, their best defender. Emerson, one of their best attackers. They're going to miss him hugely. And I'm just not sure if what the club are going to do in what we've now got left of the summer market is going to be enough to give Pellegrini the resources to hold their own in the Europa League and to do well in the league. And the fans demand that, and they're back in the stadium, and they will be demanding that. So I think it's going to be a difficult season. But I'm a big Pellegrini fan. I hope he proves me wrong, but I can see them having a tough time.
Okay, Chris, I know you're a Betis fan yourself, so I hope the answer from the guys there on your favourites was encouraging. We're going to take a quick break now. We'll come back with our final two questions for this month's Q&A.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. Our last question from a socio comes from Liam Jones. Hi, Liam. Thanks for getting involved. Liam asks, how do you guys rate Real Sociedad's chances this season? Can they spring a surprise and beat Barca this weekend? Well, by the time you guys listen to this, you'll know the answer to the second part. But just in general, over the season, how are La Real shaping up, guys?
I think they need another striker if they're really going to go for... to push on from last season. There's no questioning what Isak's capable of. But beyond that, Carlos Fernandez came in and looked a great signing. He's going to be out for the whole season. William Jose is back, but he's surely not back to stay. So a lot is going to rest on the striker that they're able to bring in to finish off the fantastic moves that we saw last season and we're going to see again this season. Sensational midfield players. I love Zubimendi. I think he's a fantastic player. I think... In a different financial era, Barcelona would have snapped him up. I really am a big fan of his. Marina, likewise, both won silver medals, obviously, at the Olympics, along with Oyarzabal. It was a joy to watch them last season. There was a massive difference between how they got on without silver and with silver. So let's hope that silver's fit for all our benefit and for theirs as well. But so much rests on the striker that they can bring in between now and the window shutting.
One of the images of last season was Imanol, who, I mean, there are cases of managers who bleed the colours of their club, who feel about the club the way that, you know, you feel, Neil, about Falkirk, Pete does about Pompey. And Imanol is one of them. He's the guy who, when he came in to coach them the first time, to save them, gave it up and moved back down into the nursery team because he was scared that he wasn't up to it, because, you know, it's a club that he literally loves. And the image of last season, taking the press conference after winning the cup in a Churier Dean's strip and his muscly arms and his roar, and it wasn't, you know, there was no artifice about it, there's no PR about it. He was just a downright out and out Real Sociedad nutter. singing and weeping, and it was just, it was, and he's got this sort of knobbly, gnarled, sort of Tolkien face with a huge Adam's apple, and he was wearing a strip over something, and I think he had a, well, if he didn't have bother boots and a scarf tied to his wrist, that's the way I'd like to imagine it anyway. It was just, and I think that the microscope's on him a little bit, because, you know, if you take everything that Pete said and doesn't need repeating, then Liam, oh yeah, Thabal is beyond just a good player and a leader and a captain for them, but he's another goal supply. He dictates the way they play a lot. He's played all summer. I one of the things that you've exposed is that I think we're learning something new about football all the time. The concept of the perma-fit footballer has been established for a few seasons because of the change in diets, the change in rehab, the degree to which we allow them to rest. You know, all sort of grannies like me, I'm genuinely perturbed about what we're doing to our footballers. Genuinely perturbed that wherever they turn, there's a new demand, usually physical rather than marketing. They're asked to have less sleep because they're travelling more. They're asked to train, okay, not maybe not more, but be on the training ground more, but sometimes it's just, you know, they keep them ticking over rather than training. They're asked to play year-round with very little time to switch off mentally, more than has ever been the case before. And now you don't get the ebb and flow of slim footballers, fat footballers, like you used to when the three of us are slightly different ages, but each of us saw footballers who came back, you know, a stone overweight during the summer because they just lived it up and then sweated it out and ran it off and got on with it again. That's so long gone now that you try and tell some youngsters or some players about that and they'll just laugh at your face. They wouldn't understand the concept. So perma-fit footballers have been with us for a while, but footballers that play 11 and a half months of the season, I think we're in a new territory on that. And let's see how wear and tear and mental degradation. We're not talking about Athletic, but we are talking about a club across the Basque, Tierra Basca, that Inigo Martinez, ex-Real Sociedad, now Athletic, said, I'm not going to the Euros because mentally I'm just worn out. I'm not fit for it. I can't, you know, I couldn't do justice to myself. So how is that going to leave Oyarzabal and Pau Torres and Pedri? And Imanol has got quite significant problems to cope with, three of them. One, huge expectation having won the cup. Can we win it again? Can we finally get into the senior European places? People will be asking, can they finish top four? They can't. The second piece of pressure that's on him is this process of having youth talent coming through is it's enriching. Xabi Alonso's in charge of a promoted youth B team, and the first team has been sprinkled with products from their own academy for some time now. And the pressure grows on you to say, are they developing? Can they cut the mustard? Can they keep on doing big things or not? That pressure's on them. And I think that the pressure is on them now to make the team better without, as Pete pointed out, really much in terms of, so far with the transfer market still to close, the goal-scoring additions that they keenly need. So I mean, all right now, we'll be looking at the new season with his typical "we are Real Sociedad, we're going to destroy everybody" attitude. But they have serious challenges. And they're, of all the clubs we've talked about so far, they're the one that I'd rather speak about again in early September when the market is closed. Because they don't need to do massive business, but it's patently clear that they do need to do business. And I only want to emphasise Carlos Fernandez's absence is horrific, because he was ready to explode. He looked exceptional when he played last season. He was exactly what they needed. They spent a decent chunk of money on him. And for the fact that it's a knee injury, I think, isn't it? I think at least that's... So for him to be out for so many months is horrific for La Real. And Liam, I wish that I could top off what Pete was saying with a little bit more optimism, but I think they've got a really tough struggle first 2-3 months to cope with the lack of movement in the transfer market and the fact that we have to wait and see what Nick Oyarzabal's in.
And we should just quickly say that Ole Los Huevos of Eden Hazard, who of course in his first season at Real Madrid did do the old school thing of having a good old summer and then turning up a little bit and then just think, I'll run it off in the first few friendlies.
And everything went right for him thereafter as
absolutely
well. So,
perfect,
yeah.
Huevos.
Okay, let's wrap things up with a final question from our sponsors at Bet365, who ask, in the 5 years between 2014 and 2018, La Liga had 11 Champions League and Europa League finalists with 9 winners. The last 3 years, they've had 2 finalists, albeit both winners. Is La Liga's European dominance over? Now, gentlemen, we did touch on similar themes in the first part of this month's Q&A. So I wonder if we could use this question from our sponsors at Bet365 to get towards a prediction for not just the La Liga title, but for the two major European competitions this season. So let's start with Pete Jensen.
Well, it's the thing that Atleti want, isn't it? And they also want a consecutive league title, of course, that goes without saying. Can they do it? You just can't see beyond PSG in the Champions League. You know, I thought they were going to win it last season, and Messi's gone there to win it. So it's very hard to see beyond PSG in the Champions League. And in terms of the Europa League, you'd say that if Villarreal and Sevilla were to drop out of the Champions League and fall back into that, then once again those two, you know, would be very, very, very strong in that particular competition. And who knows, if Barca do struggle in the league and the Champions League becomes a sort of escape valve for them, and they get away from the misery sort of thing, then, you know, maybe they'll surprise some people in that competition. But I really can't see beyond Messi getting what he deserves, which is a fifth or a fourth if you don't count Paris Champions League.
So we have you down for... I just want to make sure that you guys give me something that I can throw back at you in May. So we have PSG, Pete, for the Champions League. Mm-hmm. La Liga?
To win La Liga?
To win La Liga.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. Real Madrid, I think Real Madrid will win the league.
Madrid for the league, PSG for the Champions League, and you're one pick for the Europa if you had to?
And if Sevilla and Villarreal drop into it, then they can win it.
That's two teams.
Okay, let's say Sevilla back on familiar territory.
There we are. Graham.
I'm grateful to 365 for bringing Aberdeen and the European Conference League into play. And yes, I think there's a firm chance that the Dandies, mighty Dandies, become the only team in Scotland not just with two European stars, but three.
Yeah, they're going to get a full star if they win the conference.
Have you ever heard of Luca Brasi and where he sleeps?
Okay.
Just don't put your hand on the bar when you're near me, okay? Because that's how it all begins with the stiletto. So Carabag are dead meat. We're going through the group stage and we're going to win the Conference League. Bet365's question needs to be answered correctly, Neil. Yes. Spain's ultra dominance of the European competitions is going to diminish. But it was, even in terms of how England used to dominate the European Cup, it was abnormal. I think we've lived through a reign where during that time, well, just outside the time frame they mentioned, Barca won two trebles. You know, the treble used to be a very rare thing. I think it's going to be more common now. Real Madrid winning three Champions Leagues back to back for the first time since somebody did that. Bayern Munich did that, finishing against St Etienne at Hampden in 76, I think. So, yeah, just like Spain winning three straight international tournaments came to an end, these things have to be cyclical. I think the stranglehold that Spain has held on European football, if you combine the clubs, the under-17s, under-19s, under-21s, the senior side, even the Olympics there, is extraordinary. And it won't go away, but diminish, yes. I think it's a fair answer to our sponsors that there is a diminution because in club terms, particularly three clubs are spending beyond belief, and Bayern Munich have consistently planned well and spend more money. They've broken their financial structure some years ago now, but it was so strict that it was hamstringing them. Now it's not. So you want to know winners. You can't handle the winners. It's more daring than it might seem to talk about Paris Saint-Germain as treble winners, because we haven't seen how the pieces fit. Ramos isn't going to be fit to play for possibly several weeks. If not now, and also Mbappe hasn't guaranteed that he's staying, so the market isn't closed yet. If Mbappe goes, I think it changes things a little bit. I think the most fearsome thing is that they are well coached. Their squad is deep. They've come closer and closer to winning the Champions League, in my opinion. And therefore, if you have a front trio of Mbappe on the left, Messi on the right, and Neymar as a sort of false nine, and you've got goals from midfield, and you've got Icardi as a backup striker, they should win the treble. So I'm going to take a little bit of a risk and say, yes, it's Paris Saint-Germain for the Champions League. I'm going to back Pete's idea in Sevilla to win the Europa League, and Aberdeen is obvious winners of the Conference League. Up the dandies!
And that completes our offering to you for this month's Q&A. I do hope you enjoyed it. Pete Jensen and Graham Hunt, thank you very much for your expertise and time. Thank you, dear listener, and enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.